Hello and welcome to another edition of CIA Files, True Stories of U.S. Intelligence. I am your host, Topher M. Ford. Got my co-host here, Brandon Givens. Brandon, what's up?
Oh, Father's Day here.
Oh, that's right. It's Father's Day here as well. Did you do anything?
Not much, really. No. We haven't got Indian food. That was nice.
I treated myself yesterday to a new bass guitar. It was an impulse purchase, and I regretted it for a moment, and I don't regret it anymore. I'm happy that I got it.
Aw, treating yourself. But
that's right. I treat myself. Go ahead.
So, I was going to ask, what are we up to today?
Well, today we are going to take a look inside the long and troubled case of Julian Assange, finally. I've been wanting to discuss everything surrounding his situation for a while, and I finally got around to writing some stuff up on him. So, and he's been in the news lately because he's been in a London prison for some years now, with the U.S. trying to get him extradited back here. And yeah, so I did up a little review. It is not comprehensive by any means. It's just kind of hitting the highlights of, you know, what Julian Assange has done and what all the hubbub is about. So yeah, we're going to take a little walk through the life of an Australian hacker. All right. Julian Assange was born in Australia in 1971 in the city of Townsville, where the Powerpuff Girls are from. His mother.
the least imaginative name.
The city of Townsville. that's all I could hear when I read that. His mother married a theater director when he was still a young child, and the family spent years traveling across the country for theater productions. His mother was an ardent nonconformist. She kept him and his siblings out of public schools, opting instead to homeschool them. At the age of 16, Julian began hacking as a teenager under the name Mendax. This was before the internet as we know it. But Julian hacked his way into secure networks, including those of the U.S. Department of Defense and the Los Alamos National Laboratory. So he got started at an early age, pre-World Wide Web.
Oh, it's like that movie War Games or something, right? With Adam Coleman.
Yep, it's very similar to that. And then also all of the hacker movies of the 90s. Where they didn't use a mouse and they just typed on a keyboard with strange animations. In 1991, Julian would face his first major legal consequences for hacking after breaking into the computer network of the Canadian telecom system Nortel. He was charged with 31 counts of criminal hacking. Nortel officials claim that Assange's hacking had caused over $100,000 in damages. Assange faced up to 10 years in prison. However, the judge let him off with just a small fine. We'll skip ahead to WikiLeaks. Assange and some other activists founded WikiLeaks in 2006. They began releasing secret documents, including the standard operating procedures for Camp Delta, which was a manual for staff at the U.S. based in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. So they started calling, you know, he's been a troublemaker all of his life, fighting the man, so to speak. Now, WikiLeaks, so in 2010, U.S. Army intelligence officer Chelsea Manning leaked information to Assange on the Iraq War. This included a video that would come to be known as Collateral Murder. It showed footage taken from the cockpit of an American Apache helicopter of U.S. soldiers gunning down 18 civilians in the street, including a Reuters reporter named Namir Nour Eldin and his assistant Saeed Chaman. the leaking of this video would make WikiLeaks a household name. Do you remember that, Brendan, when that video came out? And...
Yeah, that was pretty sad. And it wasn't so much that stuff like that happens. It was just kind of the way it was handled and the discussion around it seemed to be passively encouraged. I mean, the thing is, like, bad things happen in war, but you don't really laugh about it. Or I don't mean, I can't say they were laughing about it, but it just seems like they were too accepting of bad things happen in war.
Right. And after so those two reporters from Reuters were killed prior to the WikiLeaks video. Before WikiLeaks released the video, Reuters was petitioning the U.S. government to get that video and to find out what exactly happened to their people. The United States refused to release the video, and they said, well, we conducted our own investigation and found that there was no wrongdoing, but we can't tell you what happened. We investigated ourselves, and we're good, so don't even worry about it.
And it's a complicated situation with a democracy, too, because, like, being a democracy, the voters, we kind of, like, want to know what's going on and whether or not what is happening is worth fighting the war. And the military's perspective is, well, our goal is to win the war. And that is our goal. That is what we do. And that is how we protect the democracy, is we win the war. And if we've, they may have been quite honest in their belief that nothing illegal was done, and therefore there was no need for anyone to know about it, especially considering that it could reduce morale, which is a war concern. Might
undermine
undermine the war effort. So I see where everyone's coming from.
Right. There is, they did have a case. However, when the video comes out, it does not look good for them because the rest of the world said, okay, this is what you consider. Okay. You watch this video and talk to the people involved, and you said, this is fine. A lot of people were not happy with that. Of course, this wasn't the only video. This was like the biggest thing probably that WikiLeaks did. It was definitely the biggest thing they had done up to this date. Because before this, I don't think there had been too much military stuff. A lot of it had to do, their leaks prior to this had to do with government officials, bankers, things like that. And then, there was some military stuff like the Guantanamo Bay manual, but this was like, this was the big thing that put them on the map. And video of, people being shot down in the street. And you hear the pilots, they're pretty giggly, they're pretty, what's the word?
Giddy?
Yeah, giddy. That's what the word, they were giddy. They were excited to gun these people down. So again, it's war. You can't expect everybody to be like, cold-hearted RoboCop when they're fighting, people are people, but still it was not a good look. So later on in November 2010, WikiLeaks also began releasing over 250,000 diplomatic cables from American diplomats. These documents included diplomatic assessments of their host countries, as well as international affairs, going as far back as 1966. Many of these documents were labeled as classified or top secret. So that's kind of a double whammy of WikiLeaks going against the U.S. government. This one was called Cablegate, because thanks to Watergate, now every scandal has the word gate on it.
Nixon!
Yeah. So, you know, the collateral murder video and Cablegate, you know, really put WikiLeaks and Julian Assange on the radar for the, you know, for the U.S. government. And they started to see some backlash following the 2010 leaks. Amazon kicked the WikiLeaks website off of its web servers. PayPal cut them off, with MasterCard and Visa soon following suit. That same year, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced an investigation into Assange and WikiLeaks to determine if their actions were a violation of the Espionage Act of 1917. Chelsea Manning, who was the Army intelligence officer who leaked the footage to Assange, was arrested, dishonorably discharged from the Army, and sentenced to 35 years in prison. In 2017, President Barack Obama commuted Manning's sentence and released her.
She is now dating Elon Musk's...
Grimes, yeah.
Yeah, baby mama.
Yeah, it's like a weird love triangle or something. I don't know. I'm assuming they're very modern. They're very modern people. I don't know.
Small world. Yeah. In certain circles, everyone knows each other.
Yeah, I guess. I wouldn't know. I'm not in those circles. All right. And then also in 2010, two women accused Assange of sexual assault in Sweden. One woman claimed Assange coerced her into sex, then tampered with his condom without her knowledge, resulting in unprotected sex. And this is after she had insisted on using a condom. Then another woman accused him of having sex with her while she was asleep, again without a condom. Assange denied the charges, and in 2012, he took refuge in Ecuador's London embassy to avoid prosecution. He had been ordered to appear in court in London, you know, to face these charges, and instead he went to the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Ecuador granted Assange asylum on the grounds that the government was troubled by the U.S.'s investigation into him. Assange remained inside the Ecuadorian embassy for 7 years, living in a small office that he converted into a studio apartment. And Swedish authorities dropped the charges in 2017, stating that while they believed Assange's accusers were credible, too much time had passed for them to be able to prosecute him. Now, leading up to the 2016 presidential election, WikiLeaks published emails from Hillary Clinton during her time as Secretary of State, triggering an FBI investigation. Assange wrote, quote, "I have had years of experience in dealing with Hillary Clinton and have read thousands of her cables. Hillary lacks judgment and will push the United States into endless, stupid wars which will spread terrorism. She certainly should not become president of the United States." WikiLeaks also published emails from the Democratic National Committee that showed the party was working on ways to undermine Bernie Sanders' primary campaign for president. And then rumors began spreading that DNC staffer Seth Rich was WikiLeaks' source for the DNC emails. After Rich was shot and killed in public, conspiracies began circulating that he had been murdered on Clinton's orders in retaliation. So all of this was a huge to-do, you know, that led up to the, you know, the 2016 presidential election, and very likely helped Donald Trump win in 2016. So, you know, Assange has been...
Even if it didn't help him win, like, I mean, it's impossible to know that. It was still, I mean, you have this person who's not a citizen of the United States acting in a way to influence the election, and he has significant power to do so. I mean, it's not just like somebody talking about the U.S. I mean, it's, you know, and so, you know, I could see why that would get some, and especially if you're getting that information in an illegal manner. That's another, you know, I mean, that's the big thing. It's not so much that he's a foreigner trying to influence the U.S. political process, but that shady methods and illegal methods may be about. But were they?
Right. It's interesting to note, too, that while the Republicans have denied it, there's evidence that the RNC's emails were also hacked, but that none of those emails were ever released, which plays into these, you know, these ideas that the Republican Party has been compromised, especially, you know, by the Russian government, and that's played a part in United States dealings with Russia. Again, there's not much evidence or I don't know that there's any, but, you know, you have groups claiming that did happen.
The thought is a lot of this came from the Russians. The Guccifer are hackers that were associated with them.
Yeah, was it Guccifer 2.0?
Yeah, something like that. Well, I mean, that's kind of the thing where this guy, Assange is either a willing Russian asset or a useful idiot, or just one of these people that is so blinded by their frustration with the United States being kind of the big kid on the block, which, you know, I mean, that can be a problem. The United States is not blameless, but why would you team up with Russia necessarily? You know, that's not necessarily the best idea. It's like, oh, well, you know, I don't really like Stalin, so I'm going to be Hitler's best friend. And it's like, if you had to, maybe, or I don't like Hitler, so I'm going to be Stalin's best friend. Like, if that was your only option, but at the same time, the U.S. isn't that awful. Like, arguably, what Russia has done and is doing is worse. So, I don't really know why he would want to work with them or accept information from them. But also, he, like you just mentioned, the Republican National Committee, like, okay, their emails may have been hacked too. Even if they weren't, WikiLeaks should have information on lots of different groups. And if they're truly journalistic, if it truly is about, hey, you know, the voters should know that Bernie was getting shafted, well, they would also leak stuff about United Russia, that political party and its shenanigans. But WikiLeaks never, like, releases anything substantial on Russia or Syria and their wrongdoings. So that's what makes it very questionable. Like, you're not just after the truth. You're after taking one group down without really considering even what their actions are about.
Right. And I remember in 2016 when WikiLeaks published those Democratic emails, you know, that along with Hillary Clinton's emails when she was with the State Department, I was like, okay, so they're obviously colluding with the Republican Party now to prevent her from becoming president. And it very much, you know, especially given Julian Assange's statements, it sounded a lot like he had a grudge against Hillary Clinton, which may have come from, you know, like, when she was working under Obama. And, you know, that when that happened, my attitude toward Julian Assange changed, because he wasn't, it didn't seem like he was trying to be like a fair and balanced journalist. It sounded like he was using his resources to attack one party in favor of another.
Also, like, if you look at his history and his behavior, especially like how he starts to act in the embassy.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I get a slight preview. Like, oh, and also his like troubled youth. I mean, I suspect he would have oppositional defiant disorder. Like the behaviors go along with that.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case, that he was raised with that mindset.
Yeah,
and then at some point
attachment and.
And at some point he focused all of it on the United States. In 2017, WikiLeaks published a trove of secret CIA documents exposing the agency's abilities to conduct surveillance on nearly anyone by accessing smart devices, including iPhones and Androids, smart TVs, voice assistants, and computers, anything. They were able to hack into every operating system, every type of phone, all the smart devices that you have in your house. And it's interesting too, because it also, the Vault 7 leaks also showed that the CIA was developing some of this malware, but they were also purchasing malware from, you know, like just random hackers on the internet. This would prove to be a major point of contention with the then CIA director, Mike Pompeo. You know, so during this time, like we mentioned, Julian Assange has been living in the London embassy of Ecuador, Ecuador's London embassy. And he proved to be an ingracious guest. This is from a BBC article, quote, Foreign Minister Jose Valencia told Congress that Assange had been using a mobile phone not registered with the embassy, repeatedly insulted the mission's workers, reportedly calling them U.S. spies, and damaged the facilities by riding his skateboard and playing football, despite being told not to do so. This is still from the same article. Cleaning staff, Mr. Valencia said, had described improper hygienic conduct throughout Assange's stay, an issue that a lawyer had attributed to, quote, stomach problems. One unnamed senior Ecuadorian official told AP News Agency that other issues included weeks without a shower and a dental problem born of poor hygiene. There's also, just breaking away here, there's also reports of cleaning staff said he was smearing feces on the walls and doing other really disgusting things. Here's more from the BBC article. Quote, Vaughn Smith, a friend who visited Assange last week, told Reuters that he rejected this claim, saying, quote, Julian has been under stress, but seemed in a balanced frame of mind every time I have seen him. It doesn't seem in character. Assange's stay at the embassy cost Ecuador some $6.5 million from 2012 to 2018, Mr. Valencia said. So, Ecuador expelled Assange from their embassy on April 11th, 2019. He was immediately arrested by British police for his failure to appear at his 2012 court hearing. Since then, Assange has been incarcerated at Belmarsh Prison in South London, where he has been fighting against extradition to the United States to face charges of espionage. So, yeah, his stay at the Ecuadorian embassy, I mean, you have to wonder, because he was living in, you know, he couldn't go outside that whole time, because for many years, there were British police stationed outside of the embassy just in case he happened to come out and they could arrest him. So he was stuck inside this place. He had turned an office into a small bedroom with a small bed and a treadmill and a desk and a lamp and his cat. Aww. Also, he had a cat that he apparently didn't clean up after. That was another issue. And it sounds like he made it hard for Ecuador to keep him there.
Yeah, I'm surprised they put up with it that long. And it was quite a sting, because they end up stripping him of his citizenship. And, you know, like, it was not necessarily a popular move, because I think it was Rafael Correa that gave him the citizenship. And then the statement, well, he did that for political reasons. And then a right-leaning president gets elected, and he strips Assange of his citizenship. And it's like, he did that for left-leaning reasons. Or,
right.
Or, he did that for right-leaning. He's a puppet of the U.S. That's why he got rid of that. And it's like, well, that is probably the real reason, but also just...
He made it easy for them if they wanted to get rid of him. He gave them, it's kind of like if you know that your boss is looking to fire you, you don't take 2-hour lunch breaks. You don't show up to work 15 minutes late because you know your boss is looking for a reason. And you don't
bring your cat to work and let it poop anywhere and not clean it up. That's
right. Yeah. So, but again, you know, I can't help but imagine that he was under a lot of mental stress, not being able to leave, knowing that the government, you know, the United States government is plotting to, you know, get him and take him back to the United States to face charges of espionage.
He's mentally ill. I mean, just through and through, he's mentally ill from the very beginning. It doesn't mean he's not a genius, but he's got some mental health issues that are pretty serious.
Yeah, I read, you know, like in reading about him, one of the articles that I pulled from, there's a 2010 article from The New Yorker that is really great. It goes in depth, and this is from the time when he is releasing this information, you know, like the collateral murder and the diplomatic cables. And you know, they had set up a big organization of mostly volunteers, and they talked about how he would become very preoccupied with his work, and he had to have people around him to sort of take care of him and to make him do stuff like shower and pack his clothes and things like that. That he would become very focused on his work and just neglect everything else. He also sounds like he was pretty socially unaware, socially awkward.
Right.
You know, it's hard to gauge a person's mental acuity from a distance, you know, but all of the signs, everything that people have said about him, sounds like he's maybe not the easiest person to be friends with or work with.
Right.
Now, here's some, you know, I mentioned the CIA Vault 7 leaks. So, according to a report from Yahoo News in 2017, Trump appointed CIA Director Mike Pompeo proposed plans to kidnap Assange from Ecuador's London embassy. Incensed by the Vault 7 leaks, Pompeo called WikiLeaks, quote, a non-state hostile intelligence service. The kidnapping plans were spurred on by intelligence reports that Russia had plans to sneak Assange out of the embassy and grant him asylum back in Russia.
Oh, could hang out with Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Edward probably doesn't want to be roommates, you know.
Yeah. All of the things I've seen of Edward Snowden, he sounds like, you know, like a decent person. It's hard to say. But
if he had a cat, he would clean up after it.
I think so. From the Yahoo News article, quote, the intrigue over a potential Assange escape set off a wild scramble among rival spy services in London. American, British, and Russian agencies, among others, stationed undercover operatives around the Ecuadorian embassy. In the Russians' case, it was to facilitate a breakout. For the U.S. and allied services, it was to block such an escape. It was beyond comical, said the former senior official. It got to the point where every human being in a 3-block radius was working for one of the intelligence services, whether they were street sweepers or police officers or security guards. So it almost seems like a Leslie Nielsen, like Naked Gun kind of, everybody is a spy, and you know,
right.
And from all, like, obviously they didn't go through with this, but they, there were all sorts of plans floated, you know, that would, a lot of them would have involved, you know, like shootouts on the streets of London, you know, like gun battles.
That'll get noticed quickly. Might get away with that in some cities in the U.S., but.
Well, that's what they were like. This isn't, you know, they're like, this isn't Iraq. This isn't Afghanistan. Yeah. It's London. And it's not normal. And so, you know, I guess the implication is that in those other places, you know, a gun battle could be attributed to the conflict, you know, some sort of conflict to cover for the fact that they were kidnapping someone. But yeah, you can't get away with that in London, where even the police officers don't have guns. So any attempts to kidnap Assange would face a host of major problems, not least of which being the risk of angering the British government. Here's more from that Yahoo News article. Quote, there was a discussion with the Brits about turning the other cheek or looking the other way when a team of guys went inside and did a rendition, said a former senior counterintelligence officials. But the British said, no way, you're not doing that on our territory. That ain't happening. And the plans were eventually scrapped in favor of pursuing a more legal approach. So that brings us up to present day. After a lengthy legal fight, British courts finally ruled that Assange would be extradited to the U.S. to stand trial for violating the 1917 Espionage Act. The British Home Office released a statement saying, quote, the UK courts have not found that it would be oppressive, unjust, or an abuse of process to extradite Mr. Assange, nor have they found that extradition would be incompatible with his human rights, including his right to a fair trial and to freedom of expression, and that whilst in the US he will be treated appropriately, including in relation to his health. Critics are saying that the US pursuit of Assange represents a grave threat to freedom of the press, and this will have a chilling effect on journalists in the future. As of today, Assange has less than 2 weeks to appeal the British court's decision to extradite him to America. So my thought is, I mean, and you know, like we've been critical of Assange here, but this does not seem right to me. That's my stance, my opinion on this.
I mean, I think he needs mental health care.
Yeah, yes, yeah, and he, you know, he doesn't sound like a great person. I don't think I'd want to hang out with him.
Well, the 1917 Espionage Act, too, is rather problematic. I mean, like, with the way it's originally written, like, if you do anything that could be interpreted as reducing military recruitment or harming the face of the military, then, oh, you can go to jail. You know, kind of like what's happening in Russia right now, where it's like, oh, well, you know, if you talk bad about if you criticize the army in any way, then, oh, well, that's a crime. And that's kind of how it was originally written.
Right. It sounds modified. It sounds like not that different than charging him with sedition, you know. And
I don't know that he can commit sedition since he's not a citizen, but.
I know, but I mean, as far as like the spirit of it, you know, I guess, you know, they've made the argument, or I've heard people make the argument, that he was directly involved with and gave guidance to Chelsea Manning on how to access this information. And so I was taught in journalism school when it comes to dealing with secrets, classified information, government documents. U.S. law with the freedom of the press, freedom of speech. If someone gives you secret documents, you are free to publish them. If you wake up one day and there's a big stack of classified documents with the big top secret stamp on the, you know, on the cover, you're free to publish that. However, if you play a part in accessing those if you were to, say, hack the U.S. government's computers to get access to this information, then you are subject to criminal charges. And that's part of the argument has been that he gave Chelsea Manning specific guidance on how to access this, what to look for, and how to get it without being caught. And so, well, that's...
Maybe the trial is important to find out, okay, how did this go down? So we can increase our own intelligence efforts, work better with counterintelligence.
Right. Of course, the other side of that is this is, you know, very easily could be just a way to punish Assange for exposing secrets that made the government look bad, and to send a message to other journalists, you know, that you could face prosecution for publishing, you know, information that we don't like.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. It kind of seems like he has run out of time. He's been dodging consequences for this for
with 10 what years. He's been through, it may be better to go to the trial and face, you know, imprisonment in the U.S. I mean, I don't know. I guess prison in England might be better than prison in the U.S. But,
well, he's been in Belmarsh Prison in London, which is, from what I can tell, it's a high security prison, and it's generally where they keep high profile prisoners. So it doesn't sound like a pleasant place.
He's there for skipping a court hearing. Like, why has he not been released? I guess he's being held while the I think he's being held while the extradition trial is going on. Because he can't be trusted to, like, come back and say, you know, he can't get bail. He can't be trusted.
He's a flight risk.
That's the word, yeah.
Yeah, he's a very strong flight risk, considering you have Russian security officers, you know, intelligence people waiting outside to spirit him away to Russia. Most recently, this is from earlier today, from the this particular article is from The Guardian. Australia won't conduct, quote, megaphone diplomacy on Julian Assange amid calls to intervene. But yeah, that is just a quick little explainer on Julian Assange, because he's been in the news lately. Obviously, very related to the CIA, given all the information he's leaked from the CIA. And the CIA plot to kidnap him kind of flew under the radar. It got a brief mention, and then people moved on. But that seems like it should have been a bigger deal.
It could be a very anticlimactic movie. It's a movie that should be made and be very just anticlimactic. And then we all just decide not to.
Right. If Quentin Tarantino made it, though, he would go ahead and put in the CIA kidnapping plot. Because, you know how he likes to, his most recent movies, he's been changing the historical narrative, like in Inglourious Bastards, he ends it with Hitler and a bunch of Nazis being murdered. And Once Upon a Time in the West, he changes that. I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it.
I've not seen it.
I'd like to see the Quentin Tarantino take on Julian Assange. I think it'd be entertaining. So that's it. That's a wrap for this episode of CIA Files. Be sure and check us out on the socials. Twitter @ CIA Files Podcast. Instagram @ CIA Files. Facebook.com/CIA Files. And of course, you can go to the website. We'll have the story and links related to it and whatnot The website is CIAfiles.net. And just another reminder, we're going to keep putting this out there. Stay tuned for our new show, Rise of Mammon, where we look at the rise of the evangelical right in the United States and lay out the case that they don't worship God and Jesus, at least as far as the Bible depicts those, and instead are in just a blind pursuit of money and power. And that's and it's getting scary. Anyway, Rise of Mammon, look for that in September. And yeah, in the meantime, keep your bellies full and have a good day.
Goodbye.